Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to dominate your fantasy football league.
Head, head! All right, time, all right, time!
FF Toolbox presents The Takeover with the fantasy executive, Corey Parson.
What's up? What's going on, Scout Army? It's your boy, Corey Parson, the fantasy executive. Getting with you for another edition, another week, another episode of The Takeover, Scout Fantasy Presents The Takeover. Of course, follow the people that give us this real estate on Twitter, at Scout Fantasy. Follow myself, at The Fantasy Exec. Got a nice program planned for you today. Of course, as you already know, we are already officially on the road to the Fantasy Football World Championships. That's when we meet up in Las Vegas and sit down for the main event and see who gets to take home this year's crown. Matter of fact, the commissioner, Scott Ack, is out in Vegas right now putting the plans together, getting the location together, getting everything set up. So it's time for us to start doing the same thing. So we're going to lead off today talking a little fantasy football, going to look at some running backs by committee. Because, I mean, for the most part, well, before I get into it, also going to do some DFS baseball today. Got a nice slate going down on a Thursday, help you get some cash. Of course, my guy Tommy G will be in the forum pretty soon. In the premium forms. If you're not already down with that, make sure you get down. Tommy G, one of the top daily fantasy baseball players, a daily fantasy sports players all around, period. But today, do have a newcomer to the Scout Army, to the Scout family. Quite sure you've heard him all over SiriusXM Fantasy Teams, work all over the internet. Follow him on Twitter, maybe even. It's my guy, Benny Riccardi. The follow on Twitter is BennyR11. Benny, what's going on, my man?
Not much, man. Pretty happy to be here. You know, we've been so deep in all this baseball talk lately, you know, relishing your chance to talk a little fantasy football here right now.
No doubt, Benny. And this is kind of where I wanted to start off was, I think what we have evolved to, I think, obviously, you know, the original, the rotisserie baseball guys, the season-long, you know, the season-long 15-team or 12-team, 5x5 rotisserie league, you know, is where we started this thing at. Then we get into the pen and pad era of fantasy football and fantasy baseball. The boom of the internet exploded and made fantasy football this tremendous mainstream big thing. Mainly the reason why we're here talking with you right now and why you're listening to us mainly probably comes from a love of fantasy football. Then, of course, more than recently we've seen the companies, the big dogs, FanDuel, DraftKings, DFS, the Daily Fantasy Explosion, and then, of course, the crumble of the Daily Fantasy Explosion. Now, we're sitting here today in the middle of May, getting ready to talk some fantasy football, getting ready to talk some fantasy baseball. Benny, I think that it's gotten to the point now with fantasy sports that if you are a fantasy sports player, you are a fantasy sports player. There's not the guy that plays the 12-team season-long baseball league, and that's it. There's not the guy that plays the 12-team season-long football league, and that's it. Now, it's more of those. It's not the guy that puts a couple dollars in on DraftKings and plays fantasy basketball for 3 or 4 months. I think when you are a fantasy sports player in today's generation, in today's era of fantasy sports player, you don't play just one fantasy sport. You play all fantasy sports.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate statement. I mean, for all of us here, especially guys who play a lot of daily like myself, you know, season-long fantasy was what got us into it in the first place. You know, I'm in my 30s right now. I've probably been playing in fantasy leagues, you know, since I was a teenager with my buddies in high school. So you're talking 20-something years right now. You have a whole group of people who've been playing fantasy sports now for, you know, basically most of their adolescence and early adult life at this point. So whether it's season-long football, season-long basketball, you know, season-long baseball, daily fantasy, and any of those sports. I mean, if we're talking about sports and we're talking about fantasy, you know me, I'm always down. I'm in for whatever draft we got coming up.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, the thing that you, the DFS guys, the top guys, a lot of times people think, oh, these DFS guys, these DFS sharks, they come out here with all of this poker money, and they're trying to ruin what we general fantasy sports players have had for years. But I always caution people that most of these DFS guys came from season-long fantasy sports.
Oh, yeah. I mean, without a doubt. You know, I always say, like, half-joking around, you know, season-long fantasy sports is kind of the gateway addiction that got most of these guys that are playing daily all the time right now into it. You know, it's just, you know, you're doing the same research that you're doing. You're just looking at the numbers in a little bit of a different way. But if you're already putting in the time for it and you're looking to make some money doing it, you want to try to have, you know, your hand in as many different ways that you can make some money doing it as possible. So I don't see any, you know, any reason why there should be beef between the two. Like I said, I have a couple season-long leagues every year, play a couple of them for money, a couple of them that I have with friends that have been going on for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years at this point. You know, and it doesn't really take all that much time away from, you know, my daily fantasy stuff. And honestly, they actually help each other. Because if I'm looking at matchups for daily fantasy, like right now in baseball season, you know, if I see a couple matchups that are good, I might have a guy or two on my bench that happens to be in one of those matchups. I'm going to go check my season-long team and make sure I get that guy in the lineup for today. So I think it actually helps you when you're managing a season-long team too, especially if you play one that has deep rosters. Because if you have deep rosters, then you actually have some decisions. You know, like if you have Mike Trout in season-long fantasy, you're playing him every day. It doesn't matter who the pitcher on the other side is. But you know what? Sometimes that third outfielder or that utility spot or two, you know, you might have three or four different options. And if you're a guy that's playing daily and you're looking at all that stuff, you know, you're going to be streaming different options in there every day based on the matchups. And, you know, overall through the course of the season, that's only going to help you overall and, you know, in the standings in your season-long too.
When it comes to traditional fantasy baseball, are you a points league guy? Are you a 5x5 rotisserie guy? 12-team, 15-league, draft, auction? What's your favorite type of season-long or traditional fantasy baseball?
Yeah, for baseball, I'm more a rotisserie guy. But for other fantasy season-long sports, I like head-to-head. Like NBA, rotisserie NBA, I hate. I'd rather play head-to-head in NBA. And the same thing with fantasy football. I mean, people who play rotisserie fantasy football league, that's just sacrilege to me, you know. Fantasy football, you should be playing head-to-head. This way, you know, especially if you're playing in a league, even if you're just playing for fun with all your boys, there's nothing better than sitting around, you know, having a beer on Sunday, watching the games, and, you know, one of your guys scores a touchdown, and, you know, you're talking trash to one of your buddies. So, you know, I'm all about head-to-head in every sport but baseball. In baseball, when I go, you know, season-long fantasy, I'm more a rotisserie kind of guy.
Hopping over to do some DFS talk right quick. I know you're one of the top grinders. I know the kind of, you know, investments that you put in there, especially on a daily basis and nightly basis, getting ready to get your thing done in daily fantasy. And if I'm not mistaken, for the most part, daily fantasy sports is your job. Well, not daily fantasy sports, but the fantasy sports industry is your job. You play for a living. You deliver content and all of that stuff. How's that going? And how did you get to that point?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. I'm not going to lie to you. Honestly, my story, I think, is a lot different than a lot of other people. You know, I kind of fell into this. It definitely wasn't something that, you know, I ever thought was going to be possible or something that I thought I was going to do. You know, I had played Daily Fantasy for a couple of years right now. A few of the websites, you know, met a couple of the guys that are in charge. They asked me, because I had been a winning player, if I would be interested in, you know, kind of sharing my thoughts on how I go about researching and how I, you know, put together teams and stuff along those lines. You know, started writing some blogs, and, you know, they kind of just took off a little bit to the point where, you know, some of the other content providers started calling me and asking me if, you know, I would be willing to write for them. And, you know, when they started talking about money and how much I, you know, they pay me to do it, you know, it eventually got to a point where I was making more money, you know, writing about fantasy sports than I was in my, you know, my day job. And I said to myself, hey, you know, I got three kids. You know, the good thing about writing for fantasy is I can stay up to do it late at night, early in the morning when the kids are at school. So it allows me to live a lifestyle where I get to hang out with my kids a little more often and, you know, still bring in the same kind of money to be able to, you know, support the family and do my part. So, like I said, for me, I just kind of stumbled into it, but it's been a godsend. And honestly, you know, I'm not complaining. Believe me, there's much, much worse ways to make a living than, you know, spending a couple hours looking at stats and watching sports.
I think a lot of the average everyday players, any of the guy listening to this podcast on his way home from work, or the guy maybe on his lunch break trying to figure out what the plays are going to be for the night, like I said, we're getting some daily fantasy talk, and even the guy that's looking to do some research and get ready for his upcoming fantasy football league drafts, or maybe he wants to investigate and get in daily a little bit more. Everybody says, cash game, cash game, cash game, cash game. And we all know about the big controversy and the misleading advertising the DraftKings and FanDuel had. It's kind of got them in a bit of hot water now. But the average guy really is not really going to, you know, doesn't want to be Benny. He doesn't want to be he doesn't want to be that daily grinder, that guy that's doing it for a living. He's the guy that wants to hop in there maybe 3 or 4 times a week. See what's on the baseball slate. Maybe says he got a night with a wife and kids out. He can kick back, drink a couple brewskis, watch the game. That guy. I think one of the mistakes that guy makes is contest selection. Let's take cash games off the table right now. Let's take cash because we all know cash games is the way you're supposed to go. Build your bankroll, play it the right way. But I think that's for the guys that are looking to be long-term grinders. If you're looking for the, as Jason Robbins calls it, the entertainment aspect of daily fantasy sports, and you want to throw $50 in tonight, $50, and you're playing on DraftKings, what are the contests that gives the listeners the best shot of turning that 50 into maybe 150?
Yeah, you know, this is actually a really good question, and here's something that I tell people when they start out. You know, everybody gets enamored with the big flashy numbers. Ooh, there's a $3 tournament tonight where I could win, you know, $10,000 for first place. That tournament has 33,000 people in it with, you know, or I shouldn't even say 33,000 people. That tournament has 33,000 entries in it. So in order for you to win that $10,000, you got to put together the best lineup out of 33,000 lineups that are entered in there. And, like Ward, you got guys that are multi-entering that tournament trying to win that $10,000 where they're throwing in 100, 200, sometimes even 500 lineups. So they're able to cover so many more different possible scenarios and combinations than the average person can. So if I'm somebody who's just throwing $50 in there trying to, you know, triple it up, maybe make an extra $100 to buy, you know, a pair of sneakers or something or take the wife out somewhere nice for dinner, what I want to do is I want to stay in tournaments. I tell people, instead of looking at the huge prize and going in a tournament with 33,000 people, the cash line in a tournament that has a $10,000 prize pool as opposed to a $100,000 prize pool is going to be lower because you only have 3,000 entries in there, which also means that you don't have to be as off the board crazy to try to win it. You can still stick with the guys who make the most sense to you as the guys that are the top options on the, you know, the top pitchers on a certain slate, or the top hitters, the top stack of bats, or a team that, you know, you think is going to score the most points. When you start getting into these huge tournaments with 30, 40,000 entries, the way that you really want to build a roster to win it, you got to go really off the board. So not only do you have to know what the chalk is, but you have to be able to know what the chalk is so that you can go in a different direction and not use some of those guys. Because let's face it, if you're putting a whole bunch of 30 and 40% owned guys in your lineup, your chances of making it to the top and winning that $10,000 are very slim. So you got to take a, you know, some more chances in a tournament like that. Maybe play a pitcher that you don't think anybody else is going to be on, or stack up a couple bats against a good pitcher and hope that this is the day he just doesn't have his stuff. So if I'm only putting in 50 or 100 bucks and trying to double or triple it up, I want to give myself the best chance to be able to cash and get some money back. So for me, if I'm playing over on DraftKings, you know, they have those maximum 3-entry tournaments. I think those things are great, you know, because you can't have guys who are coming in there and taking, you know, stacking up the Rockies on a night when they're playing at Coors Field and then taking 25 or 30 different combinations of pitchers so that no matter who the top pitching combination is, you know, they have some shares of them. In a 3-max entry tournament, you need to really sit down and say to yourself, all right, who do I feel the best about? Who do I think is, you know, the team that's going to get me some money back and help me get to the top? And people build lineups a lot more, you know, normal and a lot less, you know, computer-based covering all the kinds of different angles and possible scenarios. When you start playing in those bigger tournaments, you know, basically it's really tough for the average person who's throwing 1 or 2 lineups in there to compete against somebody who's able to cover his bases in so many different ways. Every once in a while, you're going to wind up winning, but every day that guy's going to have 5 or 10 lineups that, you know, are close to the optimal lineup because he has all the combinations, as long as the combinations that he's putting into his inputs are good ones. So I would say to things like the 3-max entry tournaments, single-entry tournaments, whenever you can find them. I mean, let's face it, you know, people say, oh, well, I could win, you know, $5,000 if I put $5 in. All right, well, 1,000 to 1 is a good return. 1,000 to 1 is the same return you're getting in first place in a, you know, single-entry tournament if there's, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 people in it. It's much better to play against a smaller field with a couple hundred people or a couple thousand people than it is to try to play in one of these fields with 30 or 40,000 entries in it and guys that have 300 or 400 of them and are covering all their angles. You have a much better ROI. The cash line, the amount of money you need to cash will be lower. You know, that's the way that I would try to attack it. And honestly, even now with me playing, you know, at higher stakes than I did when I first started playing, those are still the tournaments that I go after. You know, I don't have the bankroll to throw 25 entries into a $300 tournament every night. I'm not laying out $7,000 or $8,000 every night to play in a, you know, in an MLB tournament. But in a $150 entry tournament where it's a three max entry, I'll lay out $450 on a night, knowing that, you know, if I have three shots and nobody else has more than three shots I put in a lineup at the same tournament, you know, over the course of the long run, I'm going to be able to cash more often than the break-even point would be and make a little bit of a profit doing it that way. So those are the things that I would tell new guys. If you're coming in, stick to the single-entry tournament, stick to the three-max-entry tournament. Once you start grinding out a little bit of money playing in those, if you have some profit, that's when you take a chance at, you know, one of these big. Use the money that you already made to take those chances, not money that you're putting in there. Because, again, the chances of you actually being the guy that takes down 10,000, one in 33,000 chance, you know, that's not really good odds for you.
BennyRich11 is where he's at on Twitter, where you can follow him. Benny, where, what days of the week are you giving us the DFS baseball content over on Scout Fantasy?
Yeah, I usually do the breakdown on Mondays, and then usually on Saturday. Sometimes you'll get me on a Friday or a Sunday as well, depending on you know, what day schedule's like. But you guys will see me over there. I'm in the forums as well, so if you have any questions, you can always drop them in the forum. Or, you know, like Corey said, you can follow me over on Twitter at BennyR11. You know, I'm usually there all the time up until about 15 or 20 minutes before lock when I go and finalize all my own lineups. So if you have any questions, like I said, feel free to throw them over there on Twitter for me. You know, I'm usually pretty good about answering everybody back in, you know, pretty timely fashion if I can.
PlayScoutFantasy.com is the URL to get involved. You can make your deposit right now for the Fantasy Football World Championship. And, of course, if you want to get started right away, Scout Starter Leagues and Scout Draft and Goals in the lobby right now. Want to get into some fantasy football talk now that we got the bill paying part out of the way. All right, Benny, here we go. Talk some football. And, I'm going to give you this list right here. Tell me if I'm correct. Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, David Johnson, Adrian Peterson, Eddie Lacy, Ezekiel Elliott, Lamar Miller, Mark Ingram, and let's throw Doug Martin in the mix too, are the three down running backs that you can rely on as RB1s going into September as RB1s. And those are the top options as far as three down running backs are not going to get taken in there next to the goal line, half pass catching ability, and going to get all the work in their offense.
Yeah, I like that list. I'm gonna actually throw a couple more names on there for you. I don't know. Did you say Justin Forsett's name?
I did not say Justin Forsett. I think Justin Forsett's in some trouble, bro.
Okay, I mean we can get into that in a little bit. He's somebody that's a little bit on the fence that I might include there. I also like. I don't think you said Latavius Murray as well. Murray's a straight three down back.
Right.
Yeah, Murray's a straight three down back for the Raiders. I mean, he does the running on first and second down. He'll be the guy running out the clock if they're winning at the end of the game. And he's also the guy that's in there on passing downs for both protection and to go out of the backfield to get some passes. So Murray, definitely somebody else I think you got to include on that list. You know, Jamaal Charles, we talk about him on that list?
No, Jamaal Charles, I did not put on that list. I look at Jamaal Charles as a running back that turned 30 years old during the season, coming off his second ACL.
Yeah.
Andy Reid offense, where they want to be able to get somebody else involved. We saw Spencer Ware and Shaw Kendrick West step up last season, not to mention the fact our guy from War Paint Illustrated, which you can find right here on the Scout Network, Nick Athan, was very pretty confident in saying that the Kansas City Chiefs were looking to deal Jamaal Charles on draft day. I don't think this is Jamaal Charles' backfield no more, bro. I think Shaw Kendrick West and Spencer Will are in the mix.
Okay. No, I mean, I can understand that. Now, you know, the only other thing I'd throw out there for you is there's a couple guys who are stepping into bigger roles that we're not really sure how it's all going to work out. You know, you got a guy like Jeremy Langford in Chicago taking over for Matt Forte, who left. You also got a guy like, you know, Jay Ajayi, who's going to be taking over for Lamar Miller, who left. You know, I wish I could tell you guys right now how that's all going to work out. I don't really know. You know, looking at it from here, you know, I know the Dolphins don't really have a guy that you would consider a great pass-catching back, so you could see Ajayi handle some of that action for them. I know Langford, when he came out of college, was a guy whose hands they were talking about. And then a guy who's sneaky that I know is going to be somebody that, you know, causes a little controversy with people. But if you remember before he got hurt at the beginning of last season, Deion Lewis was the three-down running back for the New England Patriots. Now, he didn't run the ball all that much because that's an offense that throws it a lot. But he was in there running on first and second down. He was in there running sometimes at the end of the game when they were trying to kill clock. And he's definitely the passing down back on that team. And he has enough in a PPR. He's got enough pop in his passing ability alone that makes him somebody that I'm really, really high on for this coming fantasy football season. So I think he's somebody else that you might have to put on that list.
I do agree with you. Deion Lewis is the name to give some consideration to. Like you said, in PPR leagues, I do have Deion Lewis right now as a running back one in point per reception league, and that's the format that we play over here at Scout Fantasy in the Fantasy Football World Championship. And I want to jump into some of these other names now that we talked about. Eddie Lacy, I think, is secure and safe on that list. James Starks is a handcuff who I think is a must. I don't think he's a flex play. I do think that he's a handcuff. Eddie Lacy's a guy that I think, listen, Lacy, people are down on Lacy from time to time throughout the course of the offseason, but he always, always, always climbs back up the draft board when it gets to draft day, being a part of that Green Bay Packer offense. Now I want to look at some of these situations, though, and I want to start with the New York Jets situation. They brought Matt Forte in. Matt Forte, fantasy goal for fantasy owners for many, many, many years now. Now he goes into a situation where it may appear that Matt Forte, even an aging Matt Forte, will be the starting running back and could possibly be the three-down option. But, Benny, when I look at the way Bilal Powell came on towards the end of last season, listen, if you were a guy that snuck in at the 12th seed, at the 6th seed in your 12-team traditional fantasy football league, and you ended up going pretty deep and maybe even winning the championship, it's a good chance Bilal Powell was on your team. He finished very strong last year. Doesn't really carry the football between the tackles too much, but he did catch 47 passes on 60 targets.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, I'm a big Jets fan, so I'm kind of wondering how this is going to play out as well because, you know, Forte has great hands. We know that. This is a guy who had, like, double-digit receptions with Chicago 2 years ago. You know, numerous games that in a PPR format, he just went nuts with, like, 10 catches and, you know, 150 total yards and a couple touchdowns for a couple times. But not only Bilal Powell, who's good and could be a change of pace back and also a third down back, but they also brought in Kerry Robinson as well, who's not somebody who you really want to run the ball with. He's someone who they usually look to throw swing passes to out of the backfield as well. So they're bringing in all these other guys that are pass-catching running backs too. I think it kind of says one of two things to me. Either Matt Forte is not going to be the third down back, or this team is not going to be running the ball all that much at all this year. You know, it almost looks like they're bringing in guys where they can kind of move a little bit more towards like a Patriots-style offense where, you know, even the passing plays for them, the running plays that they're going to use are going to be like those long handoffs where they, you know, get it out to the running back in space or they throw quick passes to one of the wide receivers and, you know, let them break a tackle or two and, you know, try to make something happen and pick up yards that way. You know, they got two big physical guys on the outside in Decker and Marshall. Those guys do have a little bit of speed. You know, they get a lot of respect from cornerbacks. The teams are going to be playing off them. They might do a lot of what, you know, Pittsburgh does where they throw those quick passes to the line of scrimmage. And then just let those two guys go and pick up 6 or 7 yards and get yourself into a 2nd and 3, which is, you know, always a lot more manageable situation to be in.
Denver Broncos are the Super Bowl champions. Never really seen a Super Bowl championship team quite attacked and depleted like this season, this offseason edition of the Denver Broncos were. Last year, not even this time, as we went into late July into August, but, you know, C.J. Anderson was a player that fantasy owners are romantic. They remember what happened in 2014. They wanted some more of that action. We're talking, he was a top 15 pick in most drafts, PPR and standard leagues. C.J. Anderson comes back, appears to be the guy, but they have tried to replace C.J. Anderson in the offseason on a couple of occasions, not to mention the fact they went out and drafted Devontae Booker, who some believe was the best running back in this year's draft. So once again, we have another running back by committee in place right here, Benny.
Yeah, you
at
know,
least that's what I projected to be.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. This is a true running back by committee situation, too. You know, some other teams will have a guy who, you know, comes in on third downs. Like, you know, you look at San Diego where they have, you know, Melvin Gordon taking the first and second down stuff and then Danny Woodhead, the third down back. This is a true committee where they're going to give C.J. Anderson some carries. They're going to give Hillman some carries. I assume they're going to try to work Booker in there for some carries as well. And if one of those guys gets hot and one of those guys is ripping off yards, you know, that's going to be the guy that they leave in there. And that's really tough for fantasy because you could say that this is a good matchup and it looks like the Broncos are going to be running and this is a game that you want to get that Bronco running back in there. But, I mean, how many times last year did people put in an Anderson and Hillman had the big game? Or they put Hillman in because he was the starter. He played the first three quarters and basically didn't do much. And then Anderson came in the fourth quarter and broke off two 20, 30-yard runs for touchdown and wound up being the Broncos back that you wanted on the day. You know, as a guy who plays a lot of daily, I know it was maddening to me last year because we could never figure out which one is the guy that you wanted on any given day. So, you know, when you're looking at the beginning of your season and your season long, these are guys that if somebody wants to waste the second-round draft pick on C.J. Anderson this year, let him do it. You know, it's not going to be something that I do. Now, if he's available in the third or fourth round and you're late in the third round of a 12 or 15-team draft, all right, maybe you got to start considering at that point. But early in the draft, if somebody wants to jump on one of these guys, I mean, like you said, everybody was like C.J. Anderson, first-round pick last year. You know, I don't think anybody was too happy about it at the end of the season with the production that they got for him, at least through the first couple weeks of the season. He came out a little bit stronger at the end of the year, so it wasn't horrible, but, you know, you definitely couldn't have been happy with what you got out of him for the first couple.
C.J. Anderson, somebody who popped a flash on the scene 2 years ago, didn't work out last season for C.J. Anderson owners. I agree with 100% on that. Also, the guy, I really don't see myself drafting him unless he's there in round four, maybe even round five. I may even go that far down. I think I could find a better option even when I get to that point. I'm going wide receiver heavy early and early and often. Now, LeSean McCoy. I have been the biggest advocate of LeSean McCoy for years now. I don't know what happened with him and Chip Kelly in Buffalo. And then he started doing all kinds of foolishness and wilding out and getting in trouble. And it just seemed like it's all going downhill from here. Now, LeSean McCoy in Buffalo for his second season in Buffalo. LeSean McCoy is starting to become an injury concern. We've seen the concussion issues. We've seen him get banged in other little issues. And we've also seen the emergence of Carlos Williams. Scratch LeSean McCoy off that list. I don't think he's no longer a fantasy stud, no longer a three-down back. Him and Carlos Williams should be, as we project, I'm pretty sure you agree with me, Benny, going into 2016, another one of the dreaded fantasy football words, the running back by committee.
Yeah, and the thing about Carlos Williams, too, that really hurt LeSean McCoy is when he was healthy last year, they were giving him the goal line carry. So not only is McCoy not a three-down back anymore and they're bringing guys in on third down to catch passes, which obviously hurts his value in PPR, but if he's not going to be the goal line back and he's not going to be getting you those touchdowns, those plus sixes every week, that really hurts his value. So,
because
you know, I like
Carlos. That shake and bake when he had in Philadelphia under Andy Reid before Chip, well, even the first season with Chip, he was very good. But that shake and bake, that explosion that LeSean McCoy had that made him a threat to go to the house anytime he got the football, those days are over.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that's how, at this point with the role that he has on Buffalo, that's how he's going to be scoring his touchdowns. You know, he's going to need to pull a Barry Sanders and break one off from 35, 40 yards out to get in the end zone because when they're getting close, I guess they're trying to keep him from getting banged up with all the mileage he has on him. You know, they're giving the ball to Carlos Williams when they get down there in the red zone. At least that's the way they were doing it for most of the season last year when these two guys were both healthy. So unless you get a Carlos Williams injury early on in the season, you know, I don't think McCoy's going to be a, you know, workhorse kind of back anymore. I think he's going to be the first and second down back. I think they'll give him a little bit of, passing down work if they're losing and trailing at the end of the game. But again, if he's missing out on a lot of third down work and he's missing out on a lot of a goal line work, that's way too many points that you're leaving on the table. So I agree with you. This guy, in my opinion, no longer an elite running back for fantasy football.
Listening to the Scout Fantasy Takeover, I am Corey Parson, the guy rocking with me is Benny Riccardi. Talking a little bit of fantasy football about the next 5 or 6 minutes or so. We'll get to tonight's slate for everybody that's listening on demand. We'll go ahead and get to tonight's slate, get you your DFS baseball picks for tonight. Not going to leave you out, but we're talking a little fantasy football right now, and I want to hop over the situation in Seattle. Marshawn Lynch, beast mode, no longer in the NFL. He is officially retired. He's going on about his merry way. Last year we saw the rise of Thomas Rawls. The injury towards the end of the season should be good to go to start training camp. Thomas Rawls right now is the guy that's going about the third or fourth round of early drafts before the NFL draft. But I think there is a possibility that Thomas Rawls is going to be either in a position battle, so that makes that draft slot too high, or with the selection of I might get this kid's name wrong. CJ Procise, I believe his name is Procise.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, Thomas Rawls, who fantasy owners were kind of circling as a guy that could be a three down back. We have to wait and see on that one, Benny.
Yeah, I mean, they went out, I think they drafted four running backs in there, so they added a lot of guys in there looking for some depth. I mean, I think Ball still has the inside track, and you know what? I don't think he's that risky if you're looking at, like, a third or fourth round draft pick is what you're spending on him. I think that's a good situation. I'd be pretty happy with that. But I agree with you. I mean, there is a chance that, you know, they don't make him the three down back. Last year when he was that, you know, he had some pretty big games towards the end of the season when Marshawn Lynch was out, so... You know, we know that the kid's got some talent. We know he's playing behind a, you know, hopefully a better offensive line. They made a couple moves in the offseason to kind of bolster that up a little bit. You know, and we know that Seattle's a team that can keep it on the ground. They like to use the run to set up the long passes. I think, last year, I think Russell Westbrook had the, you know, highest rate in the league of passes downfield or the highest completion percentage in passes downfield. So they need that running game in order to set up that their passing attack. That's the kind of team they are. That's the, you know, the strategy and the offensive focus that they use. So I think they are going to be running it a lot. I think Rawls does have the inside track, but I agree with you. You don't go out and draft four running backs if you think that, you know, you already have the superstar that's going to be your every down back there. So the fact that they use all those draft picks, you know, it's something that I think you got to be concerned with.
Got a couple more minutes of fantasy football talk. Went kind of long at the top. May not get to all the RBBCs you want to cover in the jump because I definitely want to get this baseball talk in. But I think I may have missed Carlos Hyde. When we talk about every down runners, three down backs, Chip Kelly system. Listen, that team was pitiful last season. I don't think Hyde was poor because of Hyde's skill set. I think Hyde was poor because the team around him was poor. Carlos Hyde is a guy going in rounds five or six in drafts right now. You know what? At that point, if you start four wide and you see Hyde sitting in six as an RB1 putting three down back, I think you got to pull the trigger on that one, Ben.
Oh, without a doubt, man. If he's going in five and six, I think you're getting a steal here. Let's face it, at the beginning of the season, you know, he was playing really well before he got hurt. I think part of the reason why he had kind of bad production, on top of the fact that I agree with you, is the offensive round was horrendous last year. But, I mean, he was also playing hurt for almost the whole season. He had a game, I think, the first or second week of the season where he went for like 140 yards rushing or something crazy like that. And you know that this guy's going to get the volume, and you know that they're going to be playing in a little bit of an up-tempo up. So with all those things going in his favor, if he's going in the fifth or sixth round, I think you're getting a steal with Carlos Hyde that league.
No doubt. We're going to get into some rapid-fire running back talk before we hop into the baseball. I tell you what, we talked a little bit about Jay Ajayi, and I do agree with you on that. DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry, what's your outlook on that situation in Tennessee?
I mean, I got to think that Murray's going to get the first shot over there. I mean, let's face it, you know, I know that everybody talks about how great that line is, you know, with the Cowboys and how he was horrible when he left there last year. But I think there was a lot more going on in Philly than just the fact that he left the Cowboys offensive line. I still think DeMarco Murray's got the talent. I think he'll be the guy who gets the first crack and the lion's share of the carries. So I like him in Tennessee, but the fact that they got Henry and they brought him in there too, you know they're going to give that. You know they're going to give the kids some carries as well. Henry's a big guy, could wind up doing a lot of the goal line work for him. And again, that's always a problem for me. If you're the running back and you're not getting the goal line work, you know, if you're not getting those touchdowns, that's a big deal. That's a lot of points that you're leaving on the table there. So any guy who's not getting the goal line work, even if he's a better running back than somebody else, you know, I'd rather take a guy who I'm sure is going to get the goal line work because by the end of the season, that guy's going to outscore the guy that wasn't getting the carries inside the 10.
And we saw the Jaguars emerge last year, mainly the options in the passing game. Allen Robinson is now a first-round pick. Blake Bortles is going as a top 10 quarterback. Allen Hurns is a fifth, sixth-round draft pick in early drafts right now. T.J. Yeldon was a guy who had circled as the rookie running back that could break out last year. Well, this year he has Chris Ivory in the backfield with him, Benny.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like I said, I'm a Jets fan, so I watched Ivory run all last year. Here's the thing that people need to know with Chris Ivory. If you're taking Chris Ivory, I like him better as like a flex running back or a third running back because you have to pick and choose your spots with this guy. If the Jaguars are in a game where you expect them to be winning and they're going to be – that's where Ivory really excels. You know, you give him 15 to 25 carries like the Jets did at a lot of points in time last year, he's going to wear down a defense because he's a strong physical runner. He can break some tackles, and he also has some speed where he can break something and, you know, take it to the house. But you need to be in a game where they're running because this guy does not get in there on passing downs. You know, at least with the Jets, they thought his hands were so bad, they didn't even bother putting him in the game when they were passing. You know, that's why we saw the emergence of a guy like Bilal Powell. So, I don't know. I guess I'm assuming they're going to use T.J. Yeldon in that role. But, again, you know, Ivory's somebody who, when you can pick and choose the spots and find spots where you expect the Jaguars to be up, I think he's a guy that could get 15 or 20 carries in those games, give you 100 yards and a touchdown, and, you know, be a viable option. But on the weekend where they're playing games, you think they're going to be losing, you can't use this guy.
I got two teams I want to hit on right quick. We're going to get your comments on them. Then we'll head on over to the baseball, getting ready for tonight's slate. Starting to run a little bit short on time. But Cleveland Browns. Hugh Jackson is the coach. Duke Johnson, Isaiah Crowell are the running backs. And apparently in the offseason workout programs, Hugh Jackson has been saying the praise of his two backs.
You know, I mean, Duke Johnson last year was used as the guy in the passing game with Crowell being the guy doing the running. So, again, it's a committee that PPRs. Duke Johnson had a lot of catches in games that they were trailing and behind. So I think that's somebody who's viable. But, again, you got to pick and choose your spots with them. I don't think you got to do that much picking and choosing because I think the Browns are going to be trailing in a lot of games this year. But the games that they're trailing are when you really want to use Duke Johnson out of the backfield. I don't think Crowell is all that great of a play because, again, if they're going to be trailing a lot, they're not going to be feeding the running back and, you know, giving him 15 to 20 carries a game. So I think that really kind of limits his upside. So I like Duke Johnson more than I like Crowell.
We already know the situation in Cincinnati is something that you can throw your hands up at. But this one right here should be pretty easy, though. Would any Detroit Lion running back be on any of your season-long fantasy football teams, Jenny?
Detroit Lion?
Yes.
I mean, if you want to take a late-round flyer on Amir Abdullah, I'd be okay with that. I actually think Theo Riddick, who was the guy who was catching passes out of the backfield for them, is probably worth more in PPR than Amir Abdullah is, but neither one of these guys is somebody that I'm drafting before, you know, like the late rounds when I'm just trying to scrounge around for somebody who could have some upside.
All right, Benny, we got about 10 minutes. Let's go ahead and hammer out this baseball, get you in your zone, get you ready for tonight. Let's hop right into this slate. Detroit Tigers are in Baltimore to take on the Orioles. Mike Pelfrey, a dog, and Ubaldo Jimenez on the yard. Baltimore is the favorite 9.5 total.
Yeah, I love the bats in this game. You know, you look at the bats, especially on Baltimore. Chris Davis, big wOBA against right-handed pitching. Manny Machado, great righty on righty situation. You know, Trumbo's been smashing lately. Adam Jones, and all these guys have good stats lifetime against Pelfrey. You know, Jones is 6-12 lifetime. Trumbo's 5-10 lifetime. You know, all these guys have hit Pelfrey hard before, and they all profile to do well against them. Baltimore is probably going to be the highest owned team on the slate today, and I think it's rightfully so. In cash game, you definitely need some exposure. Really like Machado, really like Chris Davis, the two of the guys I'll have a lot of.
San Diego Padres take their anemic bats on the road to Milwaukee to take on the Brewers. Big game, James Shields and Jimmy Nelson from Miller Park. 8.5 is the total. The Milwaukee Brewers, not the Bucks, are the favorite in this contest.
Yeah, you know, the thing I like, I actually like Jimmy Nelson a little bit as a sneaky option here. He was lights out the right-handed bats last year. They only hit about 200 against them. Lefties hit over 300 against them, so that's the way you want to go. But they don't have any lefties on San Diego. The only lefty they have played significant time is Brett Wallace, and he's not somebody you're really afraid of. So I think this could be a sneaky spot here for Nelson. And then Big Game James, who I don't know how he got that nickname. It's a big negative park switch for him, going from San Diego, where home runs go to die, to Miller Park in Milwaukee, where they go to fly out of the stadium. So, you know, Shields is a guy who already has a problem giving up a lot of home runs. I'd be looking at guys like Braun, guys like Chris Carter, guys with power that can jack one out of there are probably in really good spots in this game against Shields.
All right, on to the next contest. The St. Louis Cardinals are in Anaheim to take on the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I love the old A's logo. I just love it every time I see it. Adam Wainwright and Jarrett Weaver on the bump, throwing the slab at Angel Stadium. St. Louis is the favorite. 8.5 is the total.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay taking bats against Weaver. I really like a guy like Carpenter. You know, Jeremy Hazelbaker gets to the lineup. You know, I'm Amedy Diaz, guys like Garrett Chuck, you know. Whether it's Moss or Adams who gets the first base start, I'm okay, especially with the lefties going up against Weaver, but basically anybody. He's been bad to right and left-handed bat. And then on the other side was Wainwright. You know, Wainwright is not the guy that he used to be. He's going about six innings, giving up seven or eight hits a game, you know, not getting the strikeouts that he used to. I think Mike Trout's in a really good spot here. But outside of Trout, there's nothing on this offense. I mean, they don't have anybody who has over a 340 WOBA in the last 2 years against right-handed pitching, which is pretty sad. The only guy who has a little bit of pop is Pujols at a 220 ISO score. Other than Pujols and Trout, I never play anybody on this Angels team. So I'm not starting even against the guy named Wainwright.
I don't blame you 100% for that. The Kansas City Royals are right here in the boogie down, taking on my New York Yankees. I still say that proudly. Ian Kennedy and Nathan Eovaldi at the ballpark in the Bronx. 8 is the run total, Ben.
Yeah, you know, Eovaldi's been Jekyll and Hyde. He's come out and looked dominant in some starts, and other starts you're like, why are they even rolling this guy out there? So, I don't know. Hopefully we get the good Eovaldi today. Left-handed bats have always been the way to go after him. So guys like Hosmer, Alex Gordon, really the only two good lefties they have left. I'm not playing Kendrys Morales. This guy hasn't hit a lick. I know he's cheap. There's a reason he's cheap. Stay away from him today. He's not somebody I'm looking at. And then on the other side, I hate to say it, but Adam Kennedy's been pitching really well. This guy's a former Yankee from back in the day. About a 2.50 ERA I think he has right now to start the season, a whip just a little bit over one. You know, you might want to look at some of those left-handers. Maybe a guy like McCann or Belchon could be in a decent spot here. But, you know, I'm not expecting a ton of runs from the Yankees today. And I'm a Yankee fan, too, so it pains me to say that.
The Houston Astros are in Boston to take on the Red Sox. Dallas Keuchel, David Price, a duel of a pair of Cy Young Award winners in the American League. The run total is 8, though, Benny. But these guys are not up to form.
Both of these guys have been a little bit, you know, a little bit of a disappointment so far this year. You got some tough right-handed bats on top of that Houston order. Altuve, Springer, Correa going up against Price. You know, they could get to him. They could hit a couple home runs and give him a tough time. And then Keuchel's another one who's kind of been struggling a little bit. So, you know, Xander Bogaerts hits lefties well. Hanley Ramirez, Preston Pedroia, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr., Chris Young. They can get really right-handed over there in Boston against a lefty when they need to. And with the way Keuchel's been pitching, you know, I think both of these guys are going to struggle. So I don't know if I really want to target a lot of these bats, but I'm definitely not taking these ones as pitchers.
We got about 2 minutes left, Benny, so I want to get you in on these last couple of games quickly. The Philadelphia Phillies in Atlanta to take on the Braves. Vince Velasquez, that 15 minutes was short, brother. Take Sean, Aaron Blair, turn the field. The Phillies are the favorites. Nice 7.5 low run total. You like any of these pitchers tonight?
You know, I know a lot of people are on Velasquez, but his price is really high. And I think everybody's still enamored with that 16 strikeout start he had. But, you know, that was against San Diego. Everybody strikes out 10, 12 guys against San Diego. So
Atlanta's not
I
much
like
better,
Velasquez.
Bro.
That's what I'm saying. I like Velasquez. He's a good pitcher. If he was $8,000 or a little bit cheaper, I'd be all right with him. But when you're paying the same amount of money for him that you're paying for guys like Price and Keuchel, and only $1,000 or $2,000 less than you're paying for Clayton Kershaw, for me, he's just a little overpriced today. But I think he pitches well, so I'm not really looking to take any baskets.
San Francisco get a nice hitting environment in Arizona, taking on the Diamondbacks, John Cueto and Zach Greinke from Chase Field. Arizona is the favorite. We have about a minute left in the program. What do you think about this game right here? Of course, Clayton Kershaw and Bartolo Colon with Mets and Dodgers tonight, but you already know Clayton Kershaw is who you start your cash game lineups with. What do you think about the Greinke-Cueto matchup?
Yeah, you know, I'm not really a big fan of either one of them. Arizona's a good hitter's park, probably the second one in the National League right after Coors Field. I think both of these guys are decent, but I think they both have good lineups that they're going up against today. So I don't expect a big game out of either one of them. And then just to hit on that last game, the easy way to do it today, just play Clayton Kershaw and figure out how to get enough nice bats in your lineup to fit him in. But he's going up against a Mets team that can't hit lefties. He's going to be an absolute stud tonight.
Yeah, no doubt, and I'm glad to hear that the Mets and their fans need to be quieted a little bit, Benny. You know what I mean? But I guess it's the price you pay when you be yelling 27 at them for the last 15 years. Yo, but Ben, I thank you very much, my man. Of course, get on over to Scout Fantasy everywhere. Follow him on Twitter, BennyR11. Get involved. Get the good fantasy sports advice from my guy, Benny. Welcome to the Scout Army, my man. Thanks a lot. And, of course, when we get back next week, we'll continue to talk a little bit of fantasy football, get you ready for the 2016 season. The fantasy exec is out. Get in that lobby right now, playscoutfantasy.com.